afternoon, everyone. I am Nicole Murphy, a Wealth Strategy Associate at the Chance Mantione Group at UBS Private Wealth Management. Thank you for joining our call today, where we will discuss what does it mean to invest sustainably. Now it is my pleasure to introduce Jill Faherty Lloyd.
Thank you so much, Nicole. Welcome to all our listeners and to our clients out there. I am so excited today to have a conversation with Amantya Mahodini, who is a sustainable investing strategist within our CIO's office, our Chief Investment Office. I'm so excited to have you here, Amantya, because I am asked very often, particularly from my female clients, about how they can invest with their values and build sustainable portfolios. So in our conversation today, I really want to get into sustainability, what it really means and how it can be reflected in investment portfolios. I'm hoping that we can do a deep dive today into sustainability, from talking about the planet to talking about people. And I just want to thank you, Amantya, so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jill. I'm really glad to join. And people, planet, and portfolios, I'm excited to have this conversation.
That's great. We're going to be focused on all of those things today. I always find it's wise to start by level setting the conversation. So if you wouldn't mind, let's start at the beginning. What does it mean to invest sustainably?
Yeah, perfect. That is indeed the most important question. To get us to the same page on terminology as the first point here. So to answer your question directly, the way we think about sustainable investing is as a way to intentionally look at how sustainability can be one of the investment objectives in strategy. So one way to think about sustainable investing is to use sustainability to help determine what goes into an investment portfolio, what securities, what equities, or what bonds. Sustainable investing is about ultimately understanding what's important for a client and for an investor. It's about questioning what's your objective and then how are companies positioned against that objective that you're articulating. And so all the while you're doing this analysis around sustainability, the environment, and social objectives, it's also about constructing a portfolio that is looking for competitive risk adjustment returns. So that last point there that I just mentioned is very important. Sustainable investing is about the environment and social considerations, but while always looking to have returns that are comparable or better than a traditional strategy that isn't looking at sustainability. So, you know, I'm speaking here a little bit in generalities. Let me give it even a little more color. As an investor, let's say that you are investing for your longevity strategy, which means you are investing because you have specifically for this pool of capital, let's say a 10 plus year time horizon, and you have some objective, some purpose for this portfolio and for this capital. This means that this investment objective is what drives how you and the financial advisor, like you, Jill, together set an asset allocation, which is the right combination of stocks and bonds, as well as the right combination of different investment styles. Like within stocks, you're looking at the right mix of growth or value styles, for example, or U.S. and international companies. All of these decisions are in service of that investment objective for what you want to do with this pool of capital. Now, let's say that in this equity kind of allocation that you have, you're looking for capital appreciation over the next 10 years. So you're saying, what are those companies that are resilient and that will grow over the next 10 or 15 years? And I'll invest in those stocks that meet this definition. Now, all of this was about traditional, quote unquote, investing. So how is this different from SI to your question? Well, in addition to all of these considerations, I would also say that you can say, what are these companies that will grow over the next decade? And then let's set another objective. I want to invest in those companies which over the next decade will be providing solutions to global sustainability challenges that I care about. They can be food security, they can be energy efficiency, they can be gender equity, right? So SI is about taking all of that investment and personal objective analysis and then overlaying it with a sustainability analysis to help you understand how do you go from thousands of global companies that you could invest in to a portfolio of a smaller set that just works in your specific objectives and interests.
That's very helpful and really interesting, Amantya. You're talking about setting objectives and including companies in a portfolio, of course. But what about investing with your values? That is really important to many of my clients. Or what about excluding companies that violate your values? That's a way of thinking that some of our listeners may relate to.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we're finding in speaking to investors really across the U.S. is that they're driven to consider SI as a way of investing for a variety of reasons. And for many of them, it's about alignment with their values. And for many others, it's about finding investment opportunities. Now, the way we think about SI here really is about using values to convert and find value or investment opportunities and to understand investment risks. And that's one of the ways in which this industry and the opportunity set really has evolved in the last couple decades in particular. On your question of exclusions, I want to invest sustainably, therefore I will restrict my portfolio from a few securities or a few industries even. How are we thinking about that these days? Well, there are clients where it will always be important from sort of a personal or values or moral perspective to not be invested in specific names. And that will always stay and will be an option. However, part of the reason why broadly, historically, sustainable investing has been equated with an investment approach that means simply excluding securities is because if you think of the start of sustainable investing, it really started emerging in the 1970s. It started really emerging and becoming mainstream during the anti-apartheid movement here in the U.S. and around the world. At the time, as people were thinking about values and portfolios, they also had to look at what was the quote-unquote technology that was available to investment managers to actually implement on specific goals. And at the time, really, the technology was very poor, right? It was very simple. You looked at some companies and you looked at sectors and you either had them in or out. It was difficult to understand what is a company actually doing at a granular level to, say, contribute to helping address in a positive manner some global sustainability challenges. And it was difficult to get a more granular understanding of the properties of companies. And the thing to remember here is that companies, you know, just like people, are not uniquely good or bad. They're complex entities that may be doing well on something like managing their water footprint and maybe doing poorly like on another thing like being diverse in terms of gender or race, for example, just to give you two ideas here. Now, as the industry has evolved, we've become better at being able to evaluate companies on all of these complex dimensions, which means that instead of just saying, I want to do SI, let me exclude a few things and limit my universe, now we can flip that script and say, I'm interested in sustainability. What are those names that can advance my objectives versus just helping make sure that I sleep well at night, which is also important? And a final thing here is some of our listeners may say, well, but how well can we really do this evaluation of sustainability? And is this ESG, environmental, social, and governance kind of methodology and space kind of evolved? Is it good enough? And here my answer would be for anyone who's thinking about it is in some ways, there's a lot of very valid criticism that we agree with on areas like the robustness or the accuracy of some of these ESG data. What we'll say there is that while there's still a long way to go, this industry and the data space has actually traveled quite far already. And in some ways, saying that it's not perfect, but and then waiting for it to be perfect until we can action of it means that we may miss on the investment opportunities that come along the way. So here is where we advise our clients to consider sustainability and start looking at this information and then think of it holistically with the other investment objectives, not just take it as kind of take it or leave it, which opens itself up to some of this valid criticism. So complexity there, but definitely also evolution.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you say is it's really important to just get started. And if that's starting small, that's great because you will learn as you go. That's typically how I work with a lot of my clients who might be first-time investors. You have to get started. You have to be in it to win it, as they say. Let's dig in a little bit more here. What's the argument for sustainable investing? What are the companies that we're looking at, and why does it matter?
Yeah, I mean, this is really the next question after what is it, sort of why? Why is it even worthwhile considering it? I'd say as we answer this question, we'd like to take a step back and look at really the big picture of where we are in our world in markets and economies. As we observe just directionally and we take a longer term view, what we're seeing is that some of the world's most significant secular trends, meaning those trends that are agnostic of short-term market movements, are tied to sustainability challenges and outcomes. Some of these global trends are population growth. The UN is estimating that populations will continue to increase by 2050, right? That is something that will continue to happen in this direction, regardless of what's happening with inflation and rates this quarter. Resource scarcity is another one. Aging populations globally, as the world grows richer, then we're able to keep more people, and populations are also aging. So that creates specific implications, as well as urbanization is another secular trend. Now, all of these trends imply investment challenges as well as opportunities facing our world. If I think of just the mix of two, population growth and resource scarcity, we know from data from the UN, for example, that by 2050, in just 30 years, we need to globally produce about 70% more calories, meaning, you know, food, for people, for the more people that will be on this planet in just 30 years. We'll have to do this with the same amount of land. Now, as investors, this means two things. Firstly, it means that if we are unable to achieve this need, we would face things like food scarcity. And as we've seen from the pressures that have been generated from the war in Ukraine, food scarcity, rising food prices can have negative implications on economies and markets. So that's on the one hand. Now, on the other hand, feed more people with the same amount of land, really what that means for us is it means there's innovation opportunity there. We need to find those companies and invest in those names that are investing in precision agriculture so that we can be more productive and more efficient in a more sustainable manner so that we can achieve this need for the planet that comes from the secular trend. So this is just one way that you start thinking about, okay, what's the macro issue? What's the challenge? What are the investment opportunities? And bam, what are those companies that fit in a portfolio? And so it's not so much a matter of values. Do I care about identifying and solving for this goal? Although many listeners will probably answer yes. It's also a question of, if you're not thinking about this as a macro trend, then you may be missing out in your portfolio by saying, I don't care about sustainability. It's not part of my investment behavior. So I could go on here with a few other examples that also tie to not just solutions, but corporate behavior. We know that younger generations like millennials and Gen Z care more about sustainability and are starting to vote with their dollars in supporting brands and companies as employees that are better than their peers in how they manage their people, in how they manage their carbon footprint. And so we know that looking for those companies that are better at these dimensions within their sectors will potentially help find some alpha over the longer term because of this trend of generational societal perception change. And so all of these are opportunities. There are also some risks here tied with sustainability that we would need to think about. And those come from regulators. They come from legislative risk and from litigation risk that is increasing. So all of these are just to kind of build up that bottom-up case here that ultimately sustainability is here, though economies are changing. And what we would want to do is to help clients think about, you know, what are those questions? Am I asking those questions correctly? And is that reflected in a portfolio?
Well, I think that's really interesting because you and I were talking about the fact that UBS is 150 years old. And why is it that we still exist? And it's because we keep adapting, right? The corporate sector needs to realize that if they want to be around in 30 or 50 years, they need to adapt. They need to adapt to the risks and they need to adapt to the opportunities. So from what I'm hearing you say, it's about finding those companies that are making that shift and transitioning.
That is exactly right. What will happen in the next 50, 100, 150 years? We'll be here. Pension funds, longer-term investors will certainly be here. And that's a lot of also what's driving the focus here on sustainability.
That's great. So let's say that someone's interested in adding a sustainable investment allocation to their portfolio. What do you do next if you're already invested?
Yeah, that's a great question, and often a challenging question that clients ask us. And this is where I'll say a lot of the work that you do as a financial advisor, Jill, is so important. all of sustainable investing is about tailoring investment objectives and outcomes to a specific client. As we've been talking, people care about different things and have different objectives, and you need to weave those in. Transitioning already invested assets gradually to adding SI to a portfolio is probably the most tailored part of this process. And this is why it's so important for any listeners to work with you and to work with their FA. It's ultimately the thing that you do here is you set your objectives, and then you set a gradual plan in motion where you start by identifying which types of SI strategies complement your existing portfolio. You start by understanding kind of what things like your cost basis for your investments are and what your potential tax bill would be. And then you start a very technical tax harvesting process, essentially, where you're looking to invest in times of market volatility, potentially, where markets are down. And so you can take some losses in securities that are not aligned to your sustainable objectives, and then replace those in a tax-efficient manner with securities or with SI strategies and managers that are more likely to be tied to your objectives. And there's two more ways to think about this. There's kind of the liquid side of the portfolio with listed stocks and bonds and other securities, and then there's the private markets, the alternative side of the portfolio. In the liquid side is where all of what I just said applies, right? You start thinking about market volatility, you take your losses, and then you put them into solutions and strategies and names that go closer to your goal. Often here, one way to think about it is actually not on the equity side of a portfolio, but on the fixed income side of a portfolio. Sustainable investing is not just about equities. There's many opportunities to align with these objectives in fixed income by investing, for example, in labeled bonds that address social or environmental objectives. And now, because fixed income historically has had lower gains, that's a place to take advantage of volatility and start adding more of that sustainable allocation to green your portfolio, so to speak. So that's one part of it. The second part is, if you have alternative assets in your asset allocation currently, and as you start getting distributions, or eventually if you get your capital back, then that's another way to kind of use any new liquidity that you're generating and build it around specific themes, either in the private space or in the public space, that you would build as a satellite to your core existing investment portfolio. So here the answer is it's a journey. It's not a one kind of flip off the switch, and that should be okay.
Thank you. That's really helpful. And again, it's a learn-as-you-go scenario. So far, we've talked about climate and environmental issues like food scarcity, but sustainable investing is more than just the E in ESG, right? There's social issues, and specifically diversity and gender. Those are two issues that I hear a lot about from my client base. Why does it make sense from an investment standpoint? And how does it show up in portfolios? How do we measure it? What are the key performance indicators? How should we think about investing, let's say, with a gender lens?
Yep, all excellent questions. And I'll say this one is a topic that I have spent a lot of time thinking about together with my colleagues in CIO as well. So I'm completely with you here. It's easy to think about the environment because something like carbon emissions, there's a unit there, CO2 emissions, we can measure it, and then we can manage it, right? With social issues, historically, it's been a little bit more challenging, but we shouldn't be tempted into thinking that social issues are not financially material. Diversity, both gender, racial, LGBTQIA, and other types of diversity are financially relevant for companies. And in particular, they're relevant for companies in industries where it's people power, the thing that really generates value for companies. So think of our industry, financial services, or think of technology kind of companies. Really what these companies rely on is on how much IP can they generate, how innovative can they be, and can they deliver that? They don't own hard assets. So who they hire and whether they're able to recruit and keep that talent is really important to their future profitability as well as to their future innovation potential, as has been shown by academic research. So this is where diversity, in our view, really matters. And we think there is a longer-term investment trend here to invest along the theme of diversity and equality. So what that means is finding those names, finding those companies that have, number one, on the one hand, to think about your KPIs, more diverse workforces, often that starts being measured at the board level, and then often the next layer down is kind of senior executive management type of KPIs and diversity. So that's one. The second question that now we're increasingly better able to assess is not just, you know, who are these companies hiring, but also do they have policies in place so that they can keep this talent and take advantage of it? And one example here, if I just take gender lens as the example, we would want to understand whether companies have in place maternity leave policies, for example, which are critical in not just, you know, getting women sort of in the door, but also in helping them get promoted and helping them have that flexibility to give back to the company and to be productive. So this is another way in which, in public markets at least, it's possible to invest along this line of diversity and why it matters. Now, I'll just add here, alternative investments are also an asset class where, in some ways, investing with a gender lens is easier to do in a way that you can see some actual sort of impact. So investing through either through strategies where what the strategy is doing is finding those female or diverse entrepreneurs that are providing those solutions or products to help bridge a gap that may exist in the market to serve these populations. That's a way that you can invest and potentially drive meaningful change that can be more easily attributable. You can see more of that difference and change than investing in public markets where ultimately companies are big, complex, diverse entities, as we discussed, and a little trickier to align.
There's a lot of work being done in this space. I have a couple of friends who are founders of companies that are trying to solve for problems around recruitment and retention for diverse teams. This is a very, very interesting space for investment, and I look forward to hearing more from them. So what do you do now? You know what the pain points are in the world. You know you want to be part of the solution. So what are the next steps?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the next step for anyone listening is to pick up a phone and speak to you as the financial advisor. Ultimately, the next step for every investor to articulate, not just that they want to be part of the solution, that means let's spend time on this. The next question is articulating what does sustainability actually mean to you? And how does it marry with your investment objectives? How is it different from philanthropy you may be doing on the side, right? Do you have an opportunity, actually, if you are giving to philanthropy, to bring some of those objectives and values and goals into your investment? And so that means answering questions like, is your goal to drive change that is coming because of your investment dollars? Or is your goal, and these are not mutually exclusive, is your goal to invest in those growth opportunities and capture that innovation that sustainability challenges are going to spur and help those companies scale while benefiting, while being part of the investment story? Or is your objective simply to mitigate risk, you know, to look at your portfolio and say, am I sure that my portfolio at a minimum is insulated from some of these global challenges that we're seeing and some of these investment and consumer sentiment shifts? So once you answer some of these questions, and the answer may be yes, 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 which may mean you then start looking at what are the right solutions and strategies for you. And very important, could not iterate this, you know, enough. Think of that in the context of your investment time horizon, your investment objectives, and broadly your entire wealth life, which again, Jill, I mean, that's the conversations you have with advisors and with your clients as an advisor, sorry. So I think that's very much the starting point.
That's really helpful. Thank you so much, Amantya. I know we have some wonderful literature that comes out of the Chief Investment Office. We have a monthly newsletter that you publish, and I believe our latest one just came out yesterday. And I guess later this week, we'll publish a note that talks a little bit about those criticisms that you were talking about earlier and the hot buttons in the ESG space. So at the end of the day, it sounds like we have some answers about how to address sustainable investing. Do we have all the answers? No, but it sounds like if we put our heads together, we can learn an awful lot together. And with your help, Amantya, I'm sure we can get there. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time today. And thank you all for listening.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.